This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Back Row and Chill with Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Good afternoon. It is Back Row and Chill on FUBAR Radio. I'm Johanna James and I'm joined this week by my very good friend,
Carla Harrison-Hall.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. She is coming to be my studio buddy with me today. She's going to be driving the show. We've got a really packed show for you today, guys. We've got so many guests. We're going to be talking. Well, I'm going to try and talk. We've got so many people who have got shows on the Edinburgh Festival, giving you the lowdown of what is cool to watch there if you're heading up to Edinburgh this August. Because it is basically August.
It is,
nearly,
isn't it?
Nearly, isn't it?
And it's also Johanna's birthday tomorrow.
Oh,
it is. It's my birthday.
So yeah, full on celebrations for
that. Yes, we were partying.
Now, Carla, you've been a guest on my show before.
I have, but
you've not been a co-host. So
no.
I'm going to guide you through.
Thank you.
What goes on every week? Basically, I pick a selection of my favourite songs that are to do with like movies, TV. Soundtracks that I've been just really, really loving at the moment. So I'm going to be showing you a couple of those. I've checked out a movie, an old Johnny Depp movie called Cry Baby.
I know that film.
It has the most amazing soundtrack. Really weird film. Didn't like the film.
Who else is in it?
I didn't know anybody else.
Okay. It's old, isn't it?
It's like 1991.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp's in it. He's really young. He's really fit.
He's really fit, isn't
but
he?
But even fit Johnny Depp couldn't really get... It was like the worst acting I've ever seen in my life. But the songs are amazing. So we're going to be playing a lot from Cry Baby. If you guys want to get involved in the show, we want to hear from you. So please just tweet us at FUBAR Radio or email in straight to me on my computer, which is chill@foodbarradio.com, and we will shout you out. So let us know what you're doing, what you're up to. Just get involved, basically. Please
do that.
Do that. Talk to us, because otherwise it's just us in the studio, and it's a little bit weird. Okay, we're going to kick off with the Let's kick off with Bad Boy, the Jive Bomber from the Cry Baby soundtrack.
Oh, so this is the song.
This is one of the songs from the movie, which I'm loving. But I didn't love the movie. I just love the soundtrack. Okay, there we go. This is it. Back Row and Chill.
I'm just a bad boy. La 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 la. All dressed up in fancy clothes, I ain't taking the trouble to blow my bubbles away.
Sun.
That's beautiful.
I know, what a
it's very sexy.
I know. I have been all over the like doo-wop kind of 50s songs this week. It's going to be a bit of a 50s week this week for music. Right, what were we just talking? We were just talking about something.
We're talking about feet.
We're talking about feet. Okay, no, backtrack. Here's the link. Okay, so I make comedy sketches online. I run a Facebook page and an Instagram page and whatnot.
Follow.
Recently, I shouted out Carla, she's a good mate of mine, and also an actress. And you said you got a lot of sort of likes and followers through from that. And I said, oh, did you get anyone asking to see your feet?
And I was like, no.
Because that is the number one like weird request that I get on my social media inboxes is... guys feet. Asking to see my feet.
They want which part of your foot?
The sole of the foot. They want to see the sole or the toes. And it started to be a bit of a running joke. So in a couple of our sketches, we would make sure we have like a shot of my foot just to appeal to the fans.
I can't remember what your feet look like.
They're really minging. I mean,
does anyone have nice feet?
I don't. This is the
thing. I've never met anyone with nice feet. No. Don't think so.
Yeah, I had to think.
I had to thought of someone, but actually no. No. Crusty feet.
It even like, you know, in the media, when you see a picture of a foot, it's all going to be photoshopped and edited and like...
get rid of those bunions.
Foot tune those bunions away. Exactly. And like when you just look at feet like on their own, the more you look at them as an isolated thing, they just look like...
stop looking at my feet. Sorry. I can see you.
I'm sorry. But you do have nice shoes on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you guys like feet out there? Do you find feet attractive? Is your foot fetish... oh, is your fetish a foot fetish?
Yes.
Be honest and let us know.
I think we all know someone with a foot fetish.
Tweet us at Foo Bar Radio. Have you ever had a funny story about someone with a foot fetish? Again, please let us know. We're going to talk about feet today.
Toe sucking.
Have you ever sucked a toe?
I'm not from what I remember. No.
I think you'd remember.
Yeah,
trust
me. I've definitely had my toes. Toes.
You've had
toes.
You've had your toes sucked.
Oh, really?
The thing is that I'm quite tickly. So if someone sucks my toe, I am very likely to kick them in the face quite hard.
Okay. Have you sucked a toe?
I have indeed.
How do you feel about it?
I made the massive error of it not really being clean. So it's quite salty to the taste.
Salty toes.
But never mind. Not for everyone, feet.
No.
But right, let's get back to...
The show.
Background Chill Entertainment Show. This is the part of the show where we do entertainment news. So here we go. It's the entertainment news on Background Chill. For 3 seconds, I can pretend I'm on Channel 4. Got my papers.
Shuffling the papers.
Right, ooh. First up, Wonder Woman 2, the release date.
Oh, wow.
Has been confirmed.
Okay. Haven't seen the first one yet, and I feel like a terrible person and a terrible woman and a terrible feminist.
I know.
But I haven't seen it yet.
Neither have I.
Oh!
I know, I completely...
I thought you would have seen it.
I know, but sometimes they release films in such a, like, a burst, I can physically only go many times in a week. I know, it's... well, now I've missed it in the cinema, I'm going to wait for it to be released and stuff. But, yes, it's definitely coming back. It's going to hit cinemas December 13th, 2019, so put that in your diary, because...
That's a
long time away. I don't really know much about it yet, apart from that Wonder Woman was set in 1918 at the end of World War One.
Oh.
Whereas the sequel looked like it's going to be set in the 80s.
Oh, your favourite.
My favourite era.
Favourite era.
Ever.
Definitely your favourite era.
Following the Cold War.
Political.
Oh. That's a political, political movie there. And I'm very excited about this next piece of news. Mean Girls, the musical.
Oh,
it's totally fetch.
Anyone that knows me knows I can quote like
you quote it.
So much of it.
Regina George.
Oh, I just love it.
Every girl has had a Regina George in her life.
Oh, absolutely.
It is probably the most relatable.
I was thinking of who was in our drama school. Me and Joe went to drama school together.
That's how me and Carla know each other. We are actors.
Yes.
Trained actors. And can't really get much more bitchy than American High School or drama school.
It's so true.
So that's cool. Oh, Erica Henningsen, who's from Les Miserables, will take on the role of Katie Heron. Katie Heron. The homeschool jungle freak.
It was my mom's in the 80s.
Gruel.
Remember that quote?
The what?
It was my mom's in the 80s.
Oh, no.
You're rubbish.
You're obviously a bit of a better fan.
Okay, yes.
Yes, you can win that.
I would definitely go see Mean Girls the musical, although it's Broadway.
Oh.
It's Broadway. So
quite far away.
So we're going to have to wait, obviously.
A few years
until... Unless we just go and do like a...
Maybe we could be in it.
Should we do it? Yeah. Oh my gosh. You could play... what's the one? What's
the
the girl? What's the other girl?
Gretchen Wieners.
Gretchen Wieners.
Oh, Gretchen Wieners is such a wet noodle.
It's a good role, though.
Yeah, just quite. Who would you be?
Wait,
what's her name?
Oh,
Karen.
Karen with the boobs. Whose boobs can predict the weather?
There's a 99% chance that it's already raining.
I think with that touching audition, right, I think now. you've just won that role. Actually, I prefer to play Karen.
Karen's a great role.
Yeah, I play Karen.
She's great.
For sure. Right, we run competitions every week. And last week, we ran an amazing one to do with Kong Skull Island. There we go. If you entered the competition, be listening right now, because I'm about to announce the winner. So a huge congratulations to @writerchick10. Real name, Megan.
Yes, Megan.
Who is our winner. So you have won the huge Kong Skull Island prize bundle, including the DVD. So we're going to send that to you, and make sure you stay tuned to Background Chill, because we've got loads of amazing prizes to give out every week. And make sure, guys, that you are also following our Facebook page at FUBAR Radio, because we're going to be releasing some exclusive competitions on there as well, not just our Twitter page. So make sure you're following the Twitter and you're following the Facebook. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much. Right. Ryan Reynolds isn't allowed to do his own stunts on Deadpool 2. Probably because his face is worth like £5 billion.
I don't find him attractive.
No, I don't.
Sorry.
No, not physically.
No. He's funny, which is very important.
It is, isn't it?
But not fit.
No.
Is he? Is he fit? I don't get it.
No. His wife's fit.
His wife is fit.
I prefer his wife. I
definitely prefer his wife.
Yeah. You know,
she's ridiculous. Blake?
Lively.
That's it.
Blake Lovely. More like.
Blake Love Me.
She's in the Blake, please love me. She's gorgeous.
She is.
I think Ryan's got a really banging personality. Like, I'm saying that like I know him. Yeah, me and Ryan go well by. Yeah, hey, Ryan. Riri. Ray Ray. No. There's a slight essence to Deadpool that I find attractive.
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, Carla, yes. You must.
Really shit.
It's like he plays this character that's like so witty and funny and bad boy and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is he like a bad superhero?
Yeah. He's like a dickhead superhero. He's kind of fights for good, but he's a bit of a dick as well. So, you know. Mm-hmm. Why do we like these bad men? What is wrong with
so
us?
So much about us.
But anyway, the actor said he's had some bad injuries during stunts. He broke a couple of vertebrae in his neck, and it was a bad situation. Ryan Reynolds said he was sat in a doctor's office, and about the seventh time he'd been in there that year, and the doctor wrote on the prescription pad, it reads "stuntman, point taken." Okay, well,
Point taken.
I don't really understand.
I don't
get
it. I was waiting for the punchline there.
So was I.
Okay,
so was I. Moving on. So now he has four different stunt guys that go with him everywhere, and Ryan Reynolds does not do his own stunts.
Hmm.
Oh, there's if you like Blake Lively, Lovely, love me. Mm-hmm. She is in a movie on Netflix at the moment called The Age of Adeline.
Oh no, I've seen it. Do you like it?
I enjoyed watching her, and it was a weird movie, wasn't it?
It was a really odd movie, that film.
So she gets struck by lightning when she's how old? What, 27 years
Something
old?
Something like that, yeah.
And she never ages. So for the next, what is it? She's 125.
And she looks the same.
And she looks forever 27.
Yeah.
Which initially I was like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Dream.
She just looks 27 for the rest of her life. But then it's really sad when her own daughter is like 80.
Yeah. And that's the saddest bit, because she's going to die.
And you're 27. Yeah. And, you know, that's not...
Still not a good film. An interesting concept.
Yeah.
Not a good film.
Not executed well.
No, definitely not executed well.
But if you like looking at Blake Lively, then...
We'll do.
I have this bit of a weird thing with celebrities. I like to look at their real face.
Their real face?
Yeah, so if you Google Blake Lively before she was famous, because obviously she's had a lot of work done.
Has she?
Oh, yeah.
What has she had done?
Nose job, boob job, like, there's gonna be, like, fillers and stuff. For sure.
How do you know this? Internet.
Well, you just look at her picture from before, and you're like, she had.
So what was she like before?
Half her nose is gone. Like, it's true. It's true. I'm not, you know, I'm not like, I'm not saying anyone.
Can someone tweet us in a picture of half her nose?
Of the original Blake Lively. Yeah. No, but even if you watch her audition for, because she blew up with Gossip Girl, and if you watch her original audition, or I think the pilot episode, she has her original nose, and then she obviously gets the role, gets a quickie nose job, and then does not look like that anymore.
Oh, it's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad.
Well, it hasn't really done her any harm though, is it? So
yeah, but I it's just like a weird little pastime of mine. I'll look at a celebrity that I quite like, and then I'll just Google like before surgery, and then it's amazing.
Oh,
like looking at the evolution of Kylie Jenner.
Oh wow, that is, I mean, that could, that's,
that
a
is a car episode. That is a car crash
that is
waiting to happen.
Dearie, dearie.
She's not even 25.
She's so young.
She looks like 30.
She looks older. Her face doesn't move.
I know. Like, you wouldn't know if she was happy or sad. You'd be like, hey,
no.
Will
she
you
is
marry
always
me?
Pouty.
I know. Too much of the lip stuffing. That's all gonna. I want to know where. Oh, we've got it. We've got a picture of original. Oh, the original teeth, the original nose, the original.
Wow.
Well, we can't really see the boobies. I think she must have had something done to her eyes as well.
Oh, she's so pretty though. She didn't need to do that.
She looks like a pretty country home girl.
She does.
And then there, she just looks like Blake. Fuck me.
Yeah, is she a woman crush then? Like, do you have a proper...
I think I am. I think I'm crushing on her. Who's my top woman crush?
There's so many.
There are so many women.
There's so many more women than men.
Mm-hmm. That you crush on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's very rare.
I mean, like, walking down the street, I'm like, oof.
Hey, girl.
Hey.
Yeah, I know. There's just this lack of, like, hot guys.
There's such a lack.
In the industry
in
and
Hollywood,
the world.
Actually...
But who is my woman crush? I'm going to think on that maybe. I'm going to play, talking of women, let's play the Rolling Stones' Miss Amanda Jones.
Mm.
And then we can think about what lady we want to be crushing on.
Okay.
And if you want to get involved as well, just tweet in at Fubar Radio. Who is your lady crush out of everyone? It could be famous, could be not. Let us know. Could be us. Could be me.
Yeah, me.
But ask her to live happily ever after, Miss Amanda Jones. On and on she goes,
Chill with Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to Back Row and Chill. It's Friday. I'm Johanna. I'm joined today by
Carla Harrison Hodge.
That is
My name.
It's an amazing,
it's so
famous person name. That's
okay,
what it
but
is.
I'm not famous, am I?
Not yet. All right. Yet.
Thank
three,
you.
Three letters. Very important.
Soon
to be. And we are joined today by our first guest. A huge welcome to Ellen Daniels. Welcome to the studio.
Hello.
Oh, I think I put the wrong mic on. There we go. Oh. There we go.
Did that work?
There
Hello.
We are. There we are.
Oh, you've got such a lovely voice.
Aw, thanks.
It's dreamy.
You're from across the pond.
Yeah. I'm from Florida originally, but I live in LA.
I'm going to Florida.
Are you?
Really?
I've just booked a holiday.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go. We're going to go to do the whole Orlando Universal thing.
Really?
In September.
That's so excited.
That's where I'm from. I'm from Orlando.
Oh, so, going to your hometown. Okay, we'll have to have a chat after about like where to go and what to eat.
Well, I don't even know anymore because I haven't lived there in so long and everything has like changed so massively, but I mean, you know, I can tell you like a few things. I'm like, no, we're not having that chat.
maybe after.
We are here today to talk about your show called Emotional Terrorism, which is a pretty punchy show title. What is that about? It's a one-woman show, right?
It's a one-woman show.
Brave.
It's about a lot of things. You know, it started off as like, how do I understand the origin of the voices in my head? I think like we all have these voices that are telling. I mean, maybe it's just
no.
Me.
I have voices,
definitely
right.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not alone.
Yeah. So it's like, where did those voices come from? And then I started to explore, you know, sort of my early like teens through my 20s and kind of. Just what I encountered. I was a model. I was scouted when I was 17 in Paris on the street by a modeling agent. So I started modeling. I developed an eating disorder. Like, I was told I was too fat when I was really young, and it was really scary. And my only way to kind of control that was to become bulimic. And, you know, I had like sort of emotionally abusive boyfriends and that who were much older than I was. So it was sort of taking all of this stuff. I was also a ballet dancer, so I had a like that rigorous discipline as well.
Yeah.
You know?
That'd do it. All
yeah,
those, all
so
those
it was
things.
Like a lot of that stuff. And I was like, okay, how do I look at this through a comedic lens? Because I do see it as very comical now because that's the only way I've coped with it in a way, you know? And so I created this show where, you know, I'm sort of reenacting certain parts of my life that when I've told this story to other people, they're like, oh my God, that's absurd. And they laugh because it's just like so absurd a lot of the times that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe these, you know, you can't often believe what people say. And so, yeah.
So did comedy come to you or did you, were you comedy was before modeling or
no after well actually in tandem because I moved to LA as while I was modeling and then I started acting and I was doing like small things like on TV shows guest stars and stuff and it was really hard, you know, I wasn't really, nothing was really taking off and somebody, actually multiple people, suggested that I do stand-up comedy, which was like very,
that's a massive compliment though.
It is, but I didn't know that at the time and because I'd be in these acting classes doing dramatic scenes and people would be laughing you know, and they're like, I'm sorry, it's just so funny. I'm like, what the fuck, I'm crying. And you know, I'd worked really hard to like get to this emotional place and the whole class is like So then I met actually a comedian and he was like, oh, I was telling him a story about this guy I was dating who had like invited me over to his house. I mean, dating is a strong word. I was trying to date him. I think he was just.
Oh, yeah. The one-way date.
Right.
Road.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He was like,
we knew about that.
He was allowing me to cook him dinner. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and,
God.
Yeah, it was really weird. And he was a strange guy, but he was a friend of my cousin's and I sort of got so intrigued with him and he would invite me over and we'd watch Will and Grace and whenever we were watching Will and Grace then he'd start to get really frisky,
right,
which was a little bit of a, like what's going on here.
Okay.
Yeah. And then one day he invited me into his room and I was like, yes, this is gonna happen. And then he gave me an iPod and he put the earbud in my ear and he was like, listen to this, and he played Britney Spears for me, which was like so I was like, are you trying to tell me something or what's going on? He's like, no, I just like the song. And it was just so absurd.
What song was it?
Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Okay.
And so I was like, are you trying to come out to me right now? Like, if you're gay, like, we can be good friends. I don't know, but this is just a strange moment.
Yeah.
And then he was, like, hugging me in the bed, and the clock turned from, like, midnight to 12:01, and he was like, it's my birthday.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was sort of murderous.
Ooh.
And, like, weird. So this comic that I was talking to, he was like, you should totally, like, turn this into a story for stand-up. And I didn't know how to do stand-up because stand-up was so far outside of my spectrum. I never really watched stand-up comedy. But slowly, many years later, I started to do it, basically. Somebody was like, again, you should do stand-up. So then there's like a class for everything in LA. So I took a stand-up comedy class and started doing stand-up.
I think it's so brave, people who do one woman shows. I feel like I need someone else to be like,
save me.
To you?
Yeah, I didn't
what do
realize.
You think?
Yeah, totally. I didn't realize because when you do stand up, like straight stand up comedy, you do have the audience there. I mean, you're alone, but you can, you know, you can sort of interact with the audience, and that's the fun of it. But with this more scripted show, what I have realized is, oh my God, I'm actually out here on my own. And you know, mm-hmm. if they don't laugh at something or people, different audiences respond differently to this show. So some are much more quiet and they're sort of like more contemplative, and some are more raucous and like, no, he didn't, you know. And like, so it sort of depends. And, you know, when you're up there alone and you don't hear the first laugh that you think you're going to get, it's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah,
it's like, shit, we have an hour.
I said,
where I'm just gonna be here doing this. So, you know,
guys, that was a joke.
Did you? Guys, did you? Is this not working? I'll leave. That's okay.
And have you ever thought about collaborating with other girls? Because I'm just thinking, like, mm-hmm. your stories are so relatable. Because I'm going,
yep. Well, I wrote a web series with my friend and collaborator Reeva Stieg. She's a Swedish comedian. And we did this web series called 30 Debt-Free and Far From Happy, which you can see online at farfromhappy.com. And that was about our experiences dating in L.A., basically.
Okay.
And we wrote like a half-hour pilot for that, and so we've collaborated on a few things.
How is the dating scene in LA? Because
it's really weird.
London's pretty.
Is it weird? It's kind of weird everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Me and Johanna were like dating at the same time, weren't we?
Yeah.
I think we had a breakup at the same time, and then we went on loads of like different dates.
Yeah.
And we had some stories.
Yes.
Did
we
you?
We did.
Yeah. Yes. It's crazy.
Some of them I've stayed on the date. It's literally nosedived, and I've gone, I'm staying here because there's a story in this.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
And I want to get it.
And I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to use this night to make something from it.
Do you guys feel like men have become like increasingly like almost diminishing or kind of condescending more so than they used to be? Like, that's what I find dating now.
I think the whole, because I remember watching Bridget Jones.
Yeah.
And then realizing Bridget Jones was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the new Bridget Jones.
Mm.
And I was sort of writing a similar thing. And I was like, well, so dating now in this era for people, young people in their sort of mid-20s,
yeah.
I was like, it's all changed. It's all Tinders and dick pics and immediate things. And I was like, literally, the modern fashion is to send a picture of your genitals to a stranger, and then you kind of go, yep, okay, I'll talk to you. It's just really backwards. Like 15 years ago, you could go on a date with someone and not necessarily have like anything. Sleeping with someone wouldn't be like a...
the first thing.
It's almost like sleeping with them or you're together.
Yeah,
exactly.
Kind of like, there's nothing in between, is there?
No,
it's not like
courtship.
No, not at all.
No, like, we're just getting to
know
each other.
I think that's because men sometimes feel there's so many options.
Yeah. Well, we all have so many options, right? Because Tinder is sort of shopping for a person. Mm. And you kind of get this feeling of, like, you know, you're in control.
Yeah,
and you
shopping.
Get to just
you get to play the king. Yeah.
Yeah, off with your head. On with your head. Off with your head. Yeah, it's really... I don't know. I don't think it's good for... our humanity.
No, not at all.
My friend, actually, Rhee, the one who, she was sent a Snapchat from a man of himself jerking off. And that's a guy who's like a serious, I mean, I can't say who he is, but he's a serious person in LA.
I don't know why.
But why do they think that we want to see that?
Why? Exactly.
I'm very confused.
It's so aggressive. It must be porn, or it must be they want the immediacy. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. I think it's half that market thing where it becomes a bit like you kind of get confused between eBay and real people. And I think the sort of porn world definitely merges with social media.
Yeah.
And they can't quite distinguish what is a girl in a chat room, a fake porn chat room.
Very quick. Everything's got to be quick.
Very quick. And like sex is quick.
Yes.
Like people are so used to orgasming really quickly, so they can't just like
enjoy stuff.
Play it out a little bit. Yeah.
But also on the flip side of that, there is still, so you think everything's sort of progressed massively in this area.
Yeah.
But what hasn't progressed is the idea that if you are down to do all that stuff, that that's totally fine. You will still get slut shamed.
Totally.
You will still get
absolutely
judged.
Exactly.
In the words of someone, you will be stained. And
exactly.
I was like, hold on a second.
No.
I was like, you can't ask girls to do all this and that and this and that on the first date and still then label them as something.
Totally.
Totally not cool.
No, not cool. I wrote a blog for HuffPost UK in promotion of this show, and it was called Let Amy Schumer Make You Feel Icky So Your Daughters Can Be Free, because a friend of mine was talking about Amy Schumer's last special, which was the leather special, and my girlfriend was like, I didn't like it. It made me feel really gross. And I was like, why, though? Because, you know, that's because we are shamed all the time.
Yeah,
don't
absolutely
talk about your vagina. Don't talk. I mean, everything needs to be perfect, but at the same time, you need to be a whore. You need to be the, but don't be a whore. But do this, but don't do this. Have kids, don't have kids. Have a career, don't have a career. It's like whatever you do as a woman, it feels like somebody's ready to tell you it's wrong.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's no, middle ground. You want to be like this. It's really hard to find.
It is really hard.
Yeah, it's constant contradictions, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's hard to know. Because, I mean, I think we want to have careers now, right? But it's then, well, how do you do that and have a family? And, you know, it's everything is... And then if you did want to have a family, this is what I think. Who the hell are you going to have a family with? Like, who are you... You're going to meet a husband on Tinder?
Yeah. Or maybe it will become the standard where you have different, different relationships for different
times of your life.
Yeah. So you would literally have, it would be like, oh, he's my first, this is the first boyfriend. Yes. This is the second boyfriend. And it's like, we're expected to have families through stages rather than be with one. It's really weird.
It's weird, but maybe that model makes sense. And it might be nice if we kind of started, you know, adapting culturally or like showing that on television and stuff so people didn't feel the pressure of, in addition to all these things you have to do, you also have to find the one.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
Finding the one on Tinder.
Yeah, find the one on Tinder. When you get a picture of somebody's, like, dick, it's like, that's the one. That's him.
That's the one.
Yeah.
My soulmate. Yeah.
I saw a picture of your dad's dick, and I just fell in love.
It was
a magical moment.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Oh, yeah, it's getting weirder when, like, parents are on Tinder.
Oh, God.
That's, it's just getting confusing.
It's really confusing.
The circles are getting smaller. It's I've never actually been on Tinder.
Oh, you're so lucky.
I have.
I've
been on all of the apps.
Have you?
But for, like, a period of...
Go you.
About, all right. A period of 6 months.
Yeah, you can only do it
and
for
then,
that long.
And I went on a lot of dates. A lot. And I don't think I had one guy that I would see again.
Wow.
Like, not one.
Wow.
So...
Because why would you say... Is there a general reason? Rude?
I find that a lot of them kind of decide that they're going to pretend that they want a relationship with you.
Mm.
And I'm not asking them for that, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then when you don't have sex with them straight away, they get all funny about it.
Yeah.
That was something that you said that was really funny once on your Twitter about... I never saw him again. That was it. Remember?
No.
You don't remember. You said we were seeing different guys and they just disappeared.
Wow.
So I think what would happen as well is I'd not have sex with them, then have sex with them, and bye bye.
Never see them again.
Yeah.
It's like the end of the story, the fairy tales.
Yeah. They got what they wanted.
They got what they wanted, but then they could have just said at the beginning, I just want to have sex.
Right.
Instead of like, you know, like,
you
need to be...
the girl
exactly
that wanted the relationship, even though you didn't.
I need to be wined and dined.
Yes.
I feel
like needs to be romantic.
All of this, we need to make sure that we keep scribbling it down, because you have turned this into an amazing show.
Yeah.
Emotional terrorism. That's what we're talking about, guys, if you've just joined us. Ellen Daniels, you're going to be at... The Fringe.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival at Just the Tonic, the big room, 9 p.m. every night, except the 14th and the 28th, I think, or 27th.
And are you also going to be in London?
London,
as well?
Yeah. I'm doing a show tonight at the Hen and Chickens Theatre, okay. Highbury and Islington, 7:30 p.m. Tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m., Hen and Chickens, Highbury and Islington. And then on Sunday, we have two shows at the Rosemary Branch Theatre. I think that's sort of Shoreditch.
Yeah.
2:30 p.m. and 7:30
p.m. Oh my god, you're going to be exhausted, but huge.
It looks amazing. Yeah. It really looks great.
Calm down.
Congratulations. Right, we're going to go back to a little bit more of our soundtrack movie songs. This is another one. This is from an 80s movie called Adventures in Babysitting, one of my favourites. Do you guys know this one? Yeah, this is 25 Miles by Edwin Starr. Thank you so much for coming
in
today.
Thank you guys for having me.
That's all right. It's Back Row and Chill. Okay, I won't sing that. But yeah, that's one of my favourite songs from one of my favourite movies.
Another sexy one.
Yeah, another sexy. Good, we've got two out of two.
Two out of two.
We're going to play two?
Yeah, two.
Oh, wow, we've been chatting away. We've got our second guest in the studio. So a huge welcome to Lily Levin.
Hello.
Hello.
And we are here to talk about tits.
Yay.
Literally tits and also the documentary you're making called Tits.
Yeah.
Super exciting. What is that about? Obviously, so, tits.
Yeah, tits, basically. Really exciting. I'm actually the producer. The director is Tristan Bell, who is a really talented cinematographer. You can find him on Vimeo, Tristan Bell, other stuff that he's done. But he came up with the idea after his grandma had a double mastectomy. I think before he was born, actually. So she kind of just always had no boobs, and he was always kind of like, oh, I wonder what that's like for a woman. Mm. Like, that's, what is that
it's
for a woman?
It's interesting that a man thought that.
Yeah, I mean, he's gay as well. That's important to mention. He hasn't just gone, oh, let's make a film about tits. So I can look at loads of tits and say it's a film. No, he's gay, and he obviously grew up with a lot of close girlfriends, and obviously the situation with his grandma, and she mm-hmm. never talked about the fact that she didn't have any tits. And he just sort of wondered, oh, I wonder what is that for a woman, you know? And obviously, as a teenager, when you're sort of at that age and all your friends, if you're a boy, not you, but all your friends are just sprouting these breasts coming from nowhere. And so obviously, if you're a straight boy, you're like, whoa, oh, this is yay. And if you're a gay boy, you're like, oh, well, this is weird. So, it's quite nice that he's coming from that perspective, because he's got this kind of unique, genuine curiosity about it, and it's actually a really good way to explore it.
I think everyone's curious about boobs. I love boobs. Yeah.
I love boobs.
I think boobs are amazing to look at.
They are fun, aren't they?
I think it's a really... Well, it's a subject that 50% of the population can relate to, because they all have tits.
More,
and
more
50%,
than 50%.
Or more than
50%. With the majority.
Oh, wait, how much are we... What? Oh, how much?
Just more.
We're just
I don't have
a little bit more. So there's more tits than not. But then some men do have tits as well, so it probably equals it out.
You know, man
boobs. But this documentary, this sounds really, really cool. So you cover issues like breast cancer, reduction surgery, enhancement surgery, transgender issues, sexuality issues, because there is there's a massive movement of sexualizing boobs. I mean, they've always have been looked at that way. But I remember when I was younger, people breastfeeding, like in the park or wherever. Or my mum's friends, they just whack at it out, and it wouldn't even be anything.
Yeah.
I didn't even make me jump. It didn't make anyone else jump. It didn't make any of my mum's friends, male friends, jump. It was not really a thing. It was just like, oh, they're just feeding their baby. Now, like, if you feed your baby on like a tube or a restaurant, it can cause like a fucking
insane
showdown.
Somebody somewhere is going to have something to say about that shit.
Yeah, guys, if you're listening out there and you're like, yeah, if you had a bad experience, a negative experience, or, I mean, you know, like, fuck it, if you've got an opposite opinion to us, if you think it is not right, let us know. Tweet us at FUBAR Radio, join in the discussion, or email us chill@fubarradio.com, because this is a big subject, and it's one that kind of some people don't want to talk about. Or
And I think that's changed, like you say. I think it's because of the sexualization of bodies in the media.
Absolutely.
In general. And so you then, you grow up associating that part of a woman's body
with sex.
And it's starting to happen with men now, don't get me wrong. But we're talking about tits, so. I think you've got kind of almost exclusively now associate that part of a woman's body with sex. And I think, do you know what? It's fine to sexualize things in a sexual context. Because sex is great.
But feeding your child is not a sexual context, is it?
So feeding a child is not a sexual thing, and your breasts are not a sexual thing when they're doing a non-sexual thing such as feeding your child.
Exactly.
So I think it's all about context, and it's all about what that person is doing with them at the time. They're not sort of going around flashing them, going, look at my boobies. You know?
It is an odd thing, actually, to have an organ of your body that is like multifunctional and in one instance can be completely like neutral or essential, really. And then in another instance, be completely sexual. It is
made that for it, and I think that's fine. I think that's fine. I just think that we need to be able to have the other side of it as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of... Some people would say that boobs have been fetishized, that they were never a sexual organ. They're just part of a woman's body, a functional part of a woman's body for feeding a baby. And they've become sexualized in the media. And I think if you've got a thing for boobs, fine. But not everybody has. Some people are...
Some people are bum men.
Some people
are
about the bums.
Mm. Or the legs. Or the feet. Definitely the feet.
The
Do you
feet.
Know what I'm saying? People can fetishise any part of the human body.
Yeah.
And tits are no different. I know people that really get excited about feet. So,
do you have a favourite person that you sort of interviewed for the documentary, a favourite story? Well, it's going to be mini episodes on a web series first, isn't it? And then combined. So do you have a personal favourite of a story or someone that you met? Or
It's really hard to give a favourite because they're all so different and coming from such different perspectives. And also, I know all of them. like they're all like my friends and family. Like it's amazing how many people are just willing to just get their tits out. That's one of the things I learned about this documentary. People aren't weirded out about their tits. It's other people that are weirded out about their tits. But I would mention some things that I've learned from doing it. I interviewed my auntie Katie, who has one breast, and she had cancer just over a year ago. And she decided not to get the reconstruction. And her reasoning for not having the reconstruction was really, really interesting to me. And I think something that should be talked about more. She just didn't want any more. It's a much more major operation if you do have the reconstruction. Also, there's no sort of guarantee that then, you know, you wouldn't get cancer in the other one, or this one would get, you know, it's not always a successful operation. And she was sort of like, well, her words were, been there, done that, wore the bra. If you don't like it, you can fuck off, basically. And somebody said to her, you know, what does your husband think about that? And she just went, what the fuck's it got to do with him?
Yeah. The hurt
it. You know. So, I don't know. And one, the main thing that she was basically saying to us, because the other thing is that she lost her mum to breast cancer when she was sort of 16, 17 years old. And obviously that's a huge thing in her life. Mm-hmm. And then she lost her older sister as well.
Wow.
When that sister, she was only in her 30s. And she left three kids behind. And so when my auntie Katie, she found the lump, she didn't go, oh no, I might lose a breast. She went, I could die. She went, you know, what about my kids?
Yeah.
What about the people in my life? It's not about the breast. It's about
everything else just shrinks right down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. I always think about it, that if I had to have the option of removing one, I think I would remove both.
Yeah.
One, for the safety, but also two, just probably just for feeling like
symmetrical.
Yeah. So either having like just, you know, rock no tits, or have a reconstruction and rock two. I think maybe that, because we've got so much stuff on our body. Like eyes and hands and stuff. Like I feel that,
exactly.
Like I mean, I remember, like, and when high profile people like Angelina Jolie, she chose to remove her boobs and get reconstruction. Although her, like, reconstruction was a pretty massive reconstruction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which, her new boobs are bigger than her old ones.
Right, okay.
Well, I mean, we interviewed somebody who had BRCA1, so had a double mastectomy and a reconstruction. And she obviously chose to have the reconstruction. I think hers ended up bigger than they were before as well. Mm-hmm. But the fact is now that they're safe.
Yeah.
Now they're not going to kind of...
Of course.
It's a weird one, because I mean we could talk about all the day, but from my personal story is I thought about having a breast reduction for 11 years.
Oh wow.
And then I decided to go for it last year.
Yep.
And so I'm like 11 months in to a breast reduction, which it actually like weirdly caused like really weird waves around people around me. People were like angry that I was getting a breast reduction.
Who?
Or just people being like, no, your boobs are great. Yeah. Or like, I wish I had your boobs. I want big boobs.
But it was always a thing, though, from what I remember, for you.
It was
a comfort thing as well.
Not really
like a basic.
Do
exactly.
It was sort of many, many, many factors. Part physical, mainly psychological. We are actors and performers, and I wanted to, I felt like I was getting constantly sort of cast in more sexual roles, or older than I was,
or like maternal roles,
because I had big boobies.
Exactly.
And it was like one of the biggest, most scariest things I've ever done in my life.
Well, we have interviewed someone who's had a breast reduction, and next week we are shooting someone who is thinking about having a breast reduction. And both of them have complained of incredible back problems. The woman who's a very good friend of mine, the woman who I'm interviewing next week, she's a double K.
Oh wow.
And she is just in constant pain.
Yeah.
And ever since she was like 16 years old, she's been in hospital every year with back problems. She slipped a disc, she's got curvature of the spine. But it's not as simple as just going, right, I'm going to get a breast reduction.
No, it is.
There's a lot of different pros and cons to it, aren't there?
And it's majorly painful. I didn't quite think through. I was so focused on just like the end goal.
Yeah.
I didn't quite think about the process of it.
Yeah.
And it was horrifically painful. It is nothing like a breast enlargement. Mm. It's like major, major reconstructive surgery. Mm. The scar, I've had a huge problem with scars and scarring, which I'm actually like, I'm all right with scars, but they are major. Mm. And I'm going to have to go back and get more stuff done with them. And so I can talk about boobs all day because it is a subject for me. I've been there through it. Overall, so happy I did it. And nobody needs to know unless I tell them. And now I've just said it on live on the radio.
Has it kind of, has the documentary changed the way you see your boobs, Lily?
Yeah. Yeah, it has actually. I mean, I'm actually waiting to find out if I've got BRCA1. If you find it's not very likely, but it's obviously as I've explained about my aunt, it's massively in my family. So I'm actually waiting to find out. I'm not really concerned about it because I feel like once you know, you know, and if you don't, you don't. But you always think, okay, what would I do? Would I get them off? Maybe I would. Maybe I wouldn't get them reconstructed. Maybe they're not that much of a massive part of me after all. Maybe. Yeah. I could go around topless if I didn't have any boobs.
So if you guys have joined us and wondering what we're talking about, we are talking about tits, obviously the literal tits. We're also talking about tits, the documentary film that you're making, Lily. And where can people go, just to round up, where can people go to find this? It's going to be online?
Yeah, you can go to www.titsdocumentary.com to learn all about it, have a look at all the participants, watch some clips. You can subscribe to the newsletter on the website as well. All you have to do is put your email in and we'll send you little things about it. And
amazing.
Like more clips and stuff. Also, we're on Instagram, tits_documentary. We're on Facebook.
Amazing Instagram. Yeah. Follow that Instagram.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go follow that in the next break. Thank you so much, Lily, for coming on.
Thank you, Lily.
It's been awesome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to play now, this is Wishing and Hoping, which is the opening scene to My Best Friend's Wedding.
Love this film.
I love this film and I love this song. This is Back Row and Chill.
Ready? Okay.
Wishing and hoping and thinking and praying, planning and dreaming each night of his charms that won't get you into his arms. So if you're looking to find love that you can share, all you gotta do is hold him and kiss him and love him and show him that you care. Show him that you care just for him. Do the things that he likes to do. Wear your hair just for him. That won't get you into his heart. So if you're thinking how great true love is, all you gotta do is hold him and kiss him and squeeze him and love him. Just do it, and after you do, you will be his. Show him that you care. Kisses will start that won't get you into his heart. So if you're thinking how great true love is, all you gotta do is hold him and kiss him and squeeze him and love him. Just do it, and after you do, you will be his.
Back Row and Chill with Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
This is Back Row and Chill. We are nearly halfway through the show, Carla.
Already?
I know. Time flies when you talk about tits, isn't it? We have our, what is it, third guest already? In the studio.
Hello.
Tamara Broadbent. Hello. A huge welcome. We're talking about your show, Get Ugly.
Sounds funny.
Sounds.
Thanks.
You're going to be.
I think it is.
Going to be at Edinburgh?
Yeah, absolutely. Flying up on Sunday. I can't believe it's so soon.
It's already here.
Yeah. It's mental.
The Frange.
Yeah.
So, Get Ugly. It says, well, the tagline here, did you know when you go through a breakup, you become 25% uglier? Which is amazing tagline.
It is. Isn't it? My sister told me that. I was crying and she was like, just so you know, it's just something that happens. So if no one fancies you from now on, just don't get sad. It's just something that happens to everyone. And I was like, thanks.
Oh, helpful, sis.
No, she's great though. She's the best. But it is true. So the show's about like female self-confidence and the link between confidence and appearance, specifically told through the story of like post-breakup and all the kind of shit that you have to deal with after that. Like, being accidentally caught with having too much pubic hair and freaking out and being like, he'll be scared if I've got a hairy minge. And then being like, why do we care about stuff like that? And then like all that kind of stuff. Staying up very late at night and freaking out they might have STDs. I don't know if that's ever happened to you. You know, I don't know when you ever just like been like after one night stands, when you're out of a long-term relationship, it's like, oh my God, what if they did? And it's like all in kind of like song form. Yeah, that's
so how that's long amazing. Was your how long was your relationship?
It was about 5 years.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
But I decided basically I wrote songs about, you know, when you're like, I'm going to be a gym girl now, and then going there and being like, actually it's quite hard.
There's a lot of effort. There's a lot more than an Instagram picture going on to make that booty.
Absolutely.
I find that there is a kind of, there's a cycle of a breakup, which I think you're like kind of probably nailing with this show, which is like you go into the five stages of grief, first of all, which is like shock, sadness, numbness, anger, and then you're finally fine or whatever. And the thing about that is they don't go in any particular order, and like you can hit anyone at any particular time and you can
all
switch
at the same time.
All at the same time. I think breakups, they are hard, and they don't get any easier, I find. You can have like a horrific breakup. Next relationship.
Absolutely.
And then the breakup is, and I feel like it's a massive game of snakes and ladders. And you're going up and you're working, and then suddenly you just get this snake all the way back to the beginning of the board. Absolutely. And you're just like, I'm here again!
I think social media makes that worse as well. Like, I don't know if you stay in contact with people on Facebook or Instagram and all that kind of
stuff. Block them all.
But they pop up. They pop up via other, like this morning, someone's on their Instagram. She popped up a picture, and just in the background, there's my ex.
Yep.
I have nothing to do with him on social media or anything, but there he is in that picture. It's you kind of can't get away.
Absolutely. The show's not so much about. It's actually about kind of finding yourself again after being with someone for that long as well, and like your own sense of identity. And about like what this idea of being a strong, independent woman actually is.
Oh yeah,
it was really interesting in the interview 2 ago. You were talking about this idea of like what that actually means, and you grow up thinking, watching Disney films and being like rom coms. Oh God, am I going to find the one? But are we? I don't think we're in that age anymore, really. And it's about like, you know, I wish I'd learned more when I was young that biceps were going to be more useful than boyfriends. Like, you know, when you're like in a house by yourself and you have to like move a heavy mountain
of furniture. Oh, yeah. I've got that down. Like, I can move a full wardrobe. I've carried a washing machine up a flight of stairs.
That
I've moved a lot.
Amazing.
I have a toolbox. My boyfriend doesn't. So he'll ask me and be like, babe, where's your tools? My tools are over there. Would you like some help? He doesn't know how to put up a shelf.
No,
he can't drive. I am like the full-on man.
I love that though, as
which
well.
Is great.
Which
I
love. Great. And also in the same way, like the guys are opening up more and becoming more sensitive. Like I think since we were young and since our parents' generation, I think that's important. I think it goes in both ways.
No, for sure.
And if we want equality, you can have your toolbox.
And also as well, just to, you know, for anyone out there, it's not just girls getting the shit end of the stick. I have known so many guys who have been through a breakup where the girls done the dirty on them, or the girls completely ripped all of their self-confidence out.
Yeah, of course.
Or, you know, it actually flies both ways.
Definitely. Specifically what I was interested in as well, though, is this idea of, like, how we're taught that beauty is value in a different way than I think men are when you're growing up.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, what that means. And especially, like, I don't know if you ever have this, but I've got a lot of friends
in my 20s who were like beautiful, beautiful girls who with a lot to offer, very talented, brilliant careers, and yet still like be like, I can't leave the house today because I've got a spot.
Yeah.
Oh. And it's like, why? Like, why is there
just
that
still valuing yourself on how you look?
Absolutely.
Despite having this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah, all that kind of thing. And like where that comes from and how we start
one of
combating that.
The best things that ever happened to me, I had a horrific experience with some hair modelling. And I went in and I was I needed money, so I decided to be paid to be a hair model. And they shaved
a
massive section of my head and gave me a sort of mullet thing on the other side. So basically the only remedy was to just lob all my hair off and have a proper crew cut. Like there was nothing. And I went from like long hair to nothing.
That sounds amazing.
And I realised how much as girls we rely on our hair to like hairography to be sexual, to like touch, you know, fiddle with it or put it up or change how you look. And I suddenly realized, I was like, crap, I don't have that anymore, I don't have any hair, so like what do I do? I was like, well, you just got to be you, and you have to rely on other things like you know, your personality, or maybe, you know, you could put on a sparkly scarf, or like you had to, it kind of I think every girl should, as a thing, like that, you know, used to go, the kids used to be, I have to go to the army for 2 years and get a buzz cut and whatever. I think girls, not go to the army, but I think that every girl should cut their hair off at one point in their life just to understand. And now I super value and my hair more, but like I also don't rely on it entirely. I've had to
everyone's got their thing, don't they, that they rely on or that they feel part of who they are, you know?
Yeah. If that gets taken away, it's really scary. So I think maybe people should test taking away. Or if you can't leave the house without makeup, maybe try and do one
day
a week.
When we went to drama school, we couldn't wear makeup.
We couldn't.
It was actually probably the best thing in lots of ways.
Yeah.
Well, it's like they say there's there's this brilliant woman called Holly Mandel who teaches at the Groundlings in LA, which is like an improv mecca, and she came over and did some talks called Good Girls Aren't Funny, and it was a brilliant talk and it changed my life, and you should check her out. But it's about this idea that like we can't change the world, but the revolution starts in here.
Yeah.
So if you change the way that you think and encourage other people to think that same way, and it's about the idea that like when girls grow up, we're taught to be controlled and well presented and pretty, and it's like all these ideas of like you're taught that that's what will make you valuable.
Yes.
But funny, being funny is all the opposite of those things, because you have to be like rude, outspoken, loud, brash and obnoxious, which is traditionally all the really unattractive qualities associated with femininity. And so like basically that whole idea is just be loud and brave and like get rid of the hair and find out what's really underneath it.
It's underneath your hair. Yeah. I found I had a very small head as well.
Like, you do have a small head.
I have a tiny head.
Oh, it's adorable.
It does
though.
Look tiny.
I just walked
it's
around
good.
Like a.
It's a great size.
I look like a needle. I was just walking
around.
A little pea
needle head.
I wore a lot of hats. Okay. Oh my gosh, we could talk about all day about this. But guys, if you want to check out Get Ugly, it's going to be in Edinburgh from the 2nd to the 28th.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, and where's it going to be?
Time.
At the
Underbelly Med Quad at 5:30 every day.
Oh, great!
Brilliant.
So you can
great
go and
slot.
Like watch that, and then go and have a drink or have dinner after.
Absolutely,
that's a really good time. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Amazing! Oh my gosh, there's not enough time. I just want to talk about. I could talk about this ever and forever and ever and ever. Okay, I think we've come halfway to the show. We need a bit of an energy lift. All right, so I'm going to play a little song from the Power Rangers movie.
Oh,
all right, we're going to get a little bit. I think I need to move a bit in
Purple
the studio.
Purple Power Ranger. Was that one? Red.
No, there isn't.
Okay.
You can be the purple Power
Yay!
Ranger, Carla. This is Give It All by Santi Gold from the Power Rangers movie.
Yeah. like a motion picture. Going through the motions with you. Lights too bright, tell him fix the fixtures. I'm way too grown to be acting ignorant. I'm scared to push it to the limit, that's a damn shame. Everybody tripping, she be getting with the campaign. Celebration, bitches trying to hit them with the champagne. Win hard cash, can't hit them with the flex. From school in detention, drooling on desk. To the man in the myth, I'm booming so blessed. Don't you see it in my eyes, be wise to respect that. Never get set back, baby, you can bet that. Let me get a hand clap, let me get the front page. I heard once the good die young age. Funny how I'm feeling like I'm finna live forever. Though I got the power, I came to let him know.
Kent Jones. Usually I like to be in the front, but right now this is Back Row and Chill.
This Ooh. Is Back Row and Chill.
That was a nice little segue.
It was that the wrong word?
It was no, that was wrong word.
Segue.
That works.
Okay.
You aren't those things that you roll along the street on?
And it's when you change the subject, isn't it?
Oh.
So both are wrong.
But well done. Gold star Yay. For effort.
Yay! Playing radio.
That was a little ident from Kent Jones. Very sexy. I love his voice. Anywho, we are joined by Brad Birch. Welcome.
Hello, Brad.
Hi, Brad. We're going to be chatting about your play, Black Mountain.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be up at the Edinburgh. Up at the Edinburgh.
Is it the Orange Tree as well?
Or? Yeah, so it transfers to the Orange Tree.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic theatre.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's very good.
So it's the Payne's Plough Festival at the Roundabout. So if you're up in Edinburgh and you want to check out what we're talking about, Payne's Plough Festival.
Yeah, please do.
Say that when you're pissed. Payne's Plough Festival. Right, so Black Mountain, it's a full-on play. 70-minute.
Yeah, 70 minutes. Yeah.
And you wrote it. Have you written plays before?
Yeah. I've done it for a few years now.
Oh, done loads.
Yeah.
How did you?
Feels like it.
Yeah. So what is Black Mountain about?
So what's Black Mountain about? Yeah. So it's about a couple who go up to a cabin in the woods to try and kind of sort out a problem in their relationship. And somebody's done something and it's kind of hurt the other person. And
right.
They try and kind of...
Like a retreat. Trying to get some neutral territory to work the shit out.
Yeah. So away from distractions.
Or a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's either the best idea in the world or the worst idea in the world. Remote cabin.
Yes, where nobody knows where you are.
Anything can happen. Yeah. Right. Okay, so it's Paul and Rebecca are running away. Yeah. And how did you get inspired? Did you go to a remote cabin to sort out your problems?
No, I didn't. No.
Oh.
Are you Paul?
I'm not Rebecca either. Why is it set there? So I kind of like to start off ideas with like ripping off other people's stuff.
We all do.
And so films like Antichrist, which was a big influence. Films like Don't Look Now, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So kind of like tonal atmosphere, those kind of things. Michael Haneke, the films of Michael Haneke. Payne's Plough asked if I'd like to write a play for them, and they showed me the space. So the Roundabout is a theatre that they take around the country, so it's like collapsible, and they drive it to different places, and then they build it anywhere. That's why it's going to all these different places. And so I saw the space, and I thought that would be conducive to this kind of idea. Mm.
And just, I'm so fascinated by writing and writers because I grew up always writing stories, but I was too terrified to ever say, I write scripts or I write plays because I felt like I wasn't qualified.
It's quite exposing, I think. I know, like, me and Johanna are actors, but you're playing someone else. So when you're showing someone you're
actors? Sorry, just
don't know if you haven't said that I'm an actor.
I'm an actor.
But it's quite exposing, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
it's like about you.
So vulnerable.
Somewhere in there, there's you, and you're showing it to people. I find that quite scary.
Yeah, Yeah, it can be scary, but the benefits are you don't work for someone else. And
true.
And that was a big part. Like when I was a kid, I wanted to be wanted to be a footballer, but I didn't. I wasn't good enough. And I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be David Hockney, so I wanted to paint, and I wasn't very good at painting. And I wanted to be a musician, and I wasn't very good at music. So I kind of slipped into this. Well, slipped into it may sound like a coma, doesn't it? But
I ended up writing
plays because I found that fine. I fit with it, you know. But yeah, so I wanted to. That so it's exposing, yeah. But that's kind of what I wanted to.
And you're the first winner of the Harold Pinter Commission.
No, definitely not the first. I went in 2016. I think that's fifth or sixth.
Oh, by Fringe first. I see that there.
Oh.
You're the Fringe first winner.
Not the first.
No, not the first. No. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
So it's going to be Black Mountain. Is it? So it's a two-hander?
No, three-hander. Oh, so three-hander. There's a third.
Does the third person come in like right at the end?
No, they're in it from the... Well,
ruin the surprise, Carla!
you kind of don't know
the
when
the twist of the whole play!
Yeah, thanks for that. Just to cancel the show now. No, they're kind of in it throughout, but you're not quite sure when they're in it or when they're not.
And how involved are you? Because obviously if you write a play, then you kind of have to give your baby over to a director and then they give their baby over to the actors. Do you ever feel a little bit like you want to step in and be like, no, Paul should be like this? Or
I think you start off being a bit like that.
Yeah,
I think you do kind of get a bit precious, but... I've been lucky being able to work with people who are better at their jobs than I am at mine. So you often find that there's stuff that you think, oh, I don't know what to do about that. And they find a solution.
You know, that's what I meant. Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. Exactly. Nailed it. Well done. Well, this is really exciting. And so, have you sat in rehearsals or anything? Or?
Yeah. So I like to be about for rehearsals as much as I'm wanted. And we've had a few previews in Wales.
Oh,
we went to Theatre Clwyd up in North Wales. And so it's been done kind of four times there.
I just suddenly remembered, I was like, oh, this is the other side of the coin, because we're actors and we'll have the writer coming in and it makes you really nervous because you're like, shit,
exactly.
The writer's in tonight. I've got to be amazing.
Right. Do you get nervous?
Yeah, I do get nervous. I get nervous first day of rehearsals for the opposite thing. Yeah. So when the actors kind of read it and look at it and go, oh, like, you're always a bit worried that they're
going to think it's rubbish.
Yeah, what is this shit on purpose? So yeah, I do get a bit nervous. I've got a show that I wrote a few years ago, and it's having its first revival in the UK at the moment at the Orange Tree.
What play is that?
It's a very long title, called Even Stillness Breathes Softly Against a Brick Wall, and it's part of a director's festival. And I wrote that in like 2012, and I'm going to be seeing that tomorrow. I'm a bit nervous about that because obviously it's one of my first plays, and so it's.
Do you have a favourite play, like a baby, like a favourite child?
No. What, of my stuff?
No.
You always get a bit embarrassed, don't you, once it's finished?
I've never finished a play. I started
Can't
many.
Say myself.
I started many, but then I'm just like, oh, look, TV. Do you have a favourite play? Yeah, like outside of your own work.
Oh, God.
Or favourite writer?
Yeah, favourite writer. Sound like Pinter? Mm-hmm. Like Pinter, Beckett, Edward Bond.
Beckett.
Those guys.
I think my favourite play...
That's too hard.
I think it's The Crucible. I think I've always been really drawn to The Crucible.
I'm going to say Streetcar Named Desire, Tennessee Williams.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Very big plays, aren't they?
Yeah.
Lots of stage directions.
I want to play Abigail in The Crucible, I think.
So. Have you not already?
No.
Oh, well, somebody give her the job.
Please! It's the dream. I'll just put on my own performance. A one-woman show of The Crucible. I'll be John Proctor. It'll be great. No, definitely no financing for that coming in anytime soon. So we're talking about Black Mountain, just to reiterate. It's going to be at Payne's Plough Festival in Edinburgh, but also at the Roundabout. No.
So it's at the Roundabout.
At the Roundabout.
Which is part of Payne's Plough. So Payne's Plough is a
there
company.
There we go. The layers of the onion are coming off.
So it's at Edinburgh Festival.
It's at Edinburgh.
The company's Payne's Plough, and it's in the Roundabout.
Done. That was it. Done. That's as simple as it was, and I just complicated that. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. All the best of luck. It sounds, a tense psychological thriller, Black Mountain.
Thanks very much.
As soon as you say Cabin in the Woods, it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm thinking of Get Out as well.
Yeah, Get Out.
A little
bit
of inspiration from Get Out.
Yeah.
That was a good movie.
That was a great movie.
It's very good. I hope this is okay as well.
But there are also positive movies about cabins in the wood. There's a movie called The Shack where a guy goes to grieve his child who got murdered and he sorts it all out.
Sounds really positive.
Yeah. No, but he goes up and he meets God and he sorts it all out in the shack.
Oh, okay.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie too.
So
there's positive shacks and there's scary thriller shacks. So hopefully,
but nothing in between.
No. It is either or. You know. Yeah. Anyone else who's just booked like a holiday villa for the summer in like the Alps are going to be like, oh shit. So never mind. Well, thank you so much, Brad,
thank
for coming
you.
In.
Thank you for having me.
We are playing some of my favourite songs from movies. This is from Matilda.
wait, which one is it?
I'm going to play it right now. No, it's this one. Yeah?
Oh. Mm.
Yeah, you got it, girl. Mm. It's background chill. Matilda, one of the best movies of the 90s. Ugh. I'm going to put it out there. A huge welcome to our final guest of the show. We've got Richard Sparks in the studio. So welcome.
Hello,
thank
Richard.
You for having me.
And we're going to be talking about Margarita Dreams, which is your new show.
It is, yes.
Amazing. Just to give a little bit of a backstory, because if people might have seen some of your other works, you wrote the Schoolmaster sketch. For Rowan Atkinson,
yes.
Right. Which is one of my...
Ooh, crackly.
What's some crackly, crackalacka? We're going to swap mics over.
Make her go away. She's crackly. All right.
Rowan Atkinson did an amazing stand-up piece called The Schoolmaster. And it's one of the best things. I found it on YouTube. Oh. A few years ago, and it was just brilliant. And it's sort of, even though it was so many, when was that, early 90s?
1978, I wrote that.
1978?
I wrote it for Rowan.
Yeah.
You remember it well, of course. his first London show was at the Hampstead Theatre, and he was asked to do it. It ended up in the show with Peter Wilson, who'd been my sketch writing and acting partner. I'd never been an actor, but when I was a student, summer holidays, and Elspeth Walker, and the only other writer on the show was Richard Curtis, apart from the cast. And so I met Rowan in Edinburgh in 76. And when it all came up, they asked me to write. I thought I'd better write something for the new guy. I mean, I couldn't, I'd written for Peter and for Elspeth before. and Rowan and Richard had written together, but I thought, well, yeah, try something. So I just sat down and started writing a list of silly names, and then and I thought, well, that's good. Now I need a sketch, so I typed it up and gave it to Rowan, and he sort of, you know, grunted. He did, you know, he sort of smiled and walked off. And
it's brilliant.
I thought, oh, well, you didn't say no, so that's good. And then, and then the next day, he did it to an empty room, and it was just unbelievable that he just filled a room with invisible, ghastly English schoolboys.
I mean, everybody,
it's just amazing.
Everyone should go on to YouTube and just type in Rowan Atkinson, schoolmaster, and it's brilliant. It's basically, it's him doing a sort of an assembly to the audience, and he's literally reading off a list of names, and it's hilarious. It's wow. so brilliant.
It's a list of names followed by some other stuff, but the thing about it is that really is a case of going out there an unknown and coming back a star.
Yeah.
John Cleese saw the show in Hampstead, and I got a call from Rowan about 4 months later saying, John Cleese has asked me to be in his new charity show, and can I do the schoolmaster? So I said, you bet. So we met up in a pub, the captain's cabin at the top of Haymarket there. Yeah. I mean, he'd be mobbed now if he went.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Shoveled off down there, and then, the, you know, going through the artist entrance, and first thing he sees Pete Townsend wandering past with the guitar, and then there's Peter Cook, and all the pythons are there, and you go, what? You
know, everyone's famous in that pub.
Yeah, no. And there's me sitting in the audience going, wow. And nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
And he came out into this room, and there was some muted applause, and then he just absolutely nailed it. I mean, if you watch his timing in that, and please watch the original. Years later, Rowan wrote a rude version with, and you know, shared the royalties with me because it's my idea.
Okay.
Very generous of them. But see the original, because that's the one that I wrote.
So say it again. What do we type in on YouTube?
Schoolmaster sketch.
Schoolmaster sketch by Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson.
And that's amazing, because then you like really kick. So basically, really, if we're going to talk real, you kicked off Rowan Atkinson, which then made Mr. Bean.
Yeah.
So we can thank you for Mr. Bean.
But it's all around in circles. I mean, Rowan was so good at physical comedy. I've been writing and script fixing a lot of sitcoms. You know, when it's not good, the producer asks someone to fix it, so you don't get credit for it. But
you're called a script doctor.
Script doctor, yeah. and I call those producers Mr. Mortgage because they paid the rent. So you don't, credit's irrelevant. And but Rowan was so good at physical comedy, I thought, let's do an action comedy.
Yeah.
So I created a show called The Optimist, which was the first comedy ever done on Channel 4. Rowan couldn't do it because by then he was busy and famous and blah, blah, blah. And I'd done it, you know, didn't really. He liked the script, but he was busy, so we had to get another actor who turned out to be the world's most brilliant mimic, N. Reitel, and he's doing silent comedy. And anyway, unfortunately, The Optimist was bad. I really was, it kind of broke my heart. And then Rowan did it a couple of years later. I'm not it, but, you know, I wrote silent comedy because he'd inspired me to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I love his physical.
And then he gets it with Mr. Bean, which is brilliant. Yeah. You know, so I was looking at that going, that's what we would have. Why would, you know,
Do you know what? That's what. So I make comedy sketches online. I do.
You do?
Yeah. And I have quite a big following, and I make sort of weekly funny videos. And I actually call it, I Mr. Bean it. If I'm doing it a certain way, I go, do I need to say that line, or can I do it with physical comedy?
You do a lot of physical comedy.
Yeah, so I do a lot of it to music, and I just call the technique Mr. Bean in it, because I love it, and if I can. And it also means that the comedy can translate, it can go global, because I've got lots of fans from all around the world, or even friends that I have from other countries like Italy or France. They're like, yeah, we watch Mr. Bean. Why? Because there was no, anyone can watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
But physical comedy is really important. We got quite a lot of physical comedy in Margarita Dreams, which is nice. But you know, if you give a great actress a redundant line, you give Meryl Streep a line like, would you like a cup of coffee? She'll just say, do I need to say this? Can I just give them the coffee? And physical action. Yeah, I had a second, not a career, but a phase a few years ago exploring the poker boom, and I wrote a couple of books about poker, which is how I ended up owning a bar in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow!
You guys are going to come.
Throw that one in there.
Absolutely.
It's my pride and joy. In the poker world, I studied body language. I got some body language experts to talk to me.
Okay.
I heard from them that 60% of communication is non-verbal. So, you know, you see people walking down the street waving their arms, talking to somebody in Australia. I mean, they can't see your hands, but without the hand gestures, your voice doesn't make the same noises.
So
Well, we are on radio
right
now.
Ooh. And linking physical...
My face is going crazy.
Yeah, I do that. I gesticulate
massively.
And it's
very funny.
So you've written Margarita Dreams, and this is for sort of a new... Well, the new up-and-comers. So you did the same
absolutely.
For...
Well, you know, the last Edinburgh review I did was in 1976, and oh my god, how long have we got?
You know, so, little while, yeah. You can.
Well, I knew that Irving Wardle from the Times was coming, and the review never came out until I was driving home in the middle of the night. My partner had to go off to direct a play in Belgium, his first job. The car exploded outside Ecclefechan. He had to hitch back to Glasgow. I slept in the car, opened the bonnet the next morning. Okay, this is that. And a hitchhike down to Wales, where I was working on Welsh television. Two lovely old hippies picked me up in a Morris Minor, and we stopped for gas. I mean, sorry, I live in
gas.
I live in Los Angeles. I do apologise.
Stopped
we
for
stopped
gas.
For petrol. Found a copy of the Times, and in it was this review from Irving Wardle going, you know, you couldn't have written it. But I was thinking, I could have done with this last week. The show's over. We've gone.
Oh.
But Edinburgh's just. I just remember it's been incorrect. Just. Yeah. Everywhere you looked, it was great.
So it's
going to
be
things happening and. Just, I'm really excited to be going back.
Yeah, it's up, well, up in
sounds
Edinburgh.
Incredible.
It's going to be at the Underbelly Ermentrude.
Yeah.
That's what, that's a weird thing to say.
How do you say it?
Ermentrude, I think. I love it. It says, well, the tagline, one of the taglines here is funny where nine margaritas can take you.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Well, yes, exactly.
Funny.
I don't think I've ever been able to have nine margaritas. I'm such a lightweight.
This kid, he's such a good actor. He does it every day. Oh. At 2 o'clock, nine margaritas. No.
Oh, because well, a few weeks ago we did. Dead. We had.
that was what we call a reversal. Yeah.
We had a company called Shitface Shakespeare come in, and they
get wasted, don't they?
History.
Yeah. And they do it every night. One member of the cast will get absolutely pissed and do the show.
Brilliant.
And apparently, like, the most hilarious stuff comes out improv every night. Obviously. Okay, so there's not actual nine margaritas. We can be safe to say.
Just four great kids. I've been writing it for. We've been rehearsing for.
Okay.
A few weeks now. We had our preview on a couple of days ago at the Fortune Theatre, which went really well.
Oh,
got
nice.
Great feedback.
Yeah. And you're going to go on the road?
Did a couple of rewrites last night. And head for Edinburgh tomorrow. It's been a blast.
And so how did you find your full cast? Did you have them in mind? Or?
No, completely by accident. I was here in November, the day before going back to LA. And my best friend's wife, who's also my best friend, said, my niece wants to become an actress. What would you advise? So, you know, I've done a lot of work in LA and stuff. So I said, well, you know, I'll talk to her if she wants. At 6 o'clock that evening, she was there at the door. You know.
Yeah.
A good sign, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I said, look, there's only really one reason to be an actor, and that's if you really, really, really have to be. And her whole face changed. She just got it. All right, I'm off to the races. Nothing else matters. So she wanted to do two things. One, get into drama school, because she just left college. She was 21 at the time. And two, learn. So we started. I said, look, all right, we'll do some stuff by Skype. We did scene study, cold readings, Shakespeare. And she was brilliant. Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice, with an English actor being Darcy, Jonathan Reed on one side, and she being Elizabeth Bennet, Bella Spate. And two of them knocking lumps out of each other, Darcy and Elizabeth Bennet Skyping each other. It's just, so, you know, she's got the attitude.
A modern
and the
day.
Given me a ting. You've just given me an idea.
Oh, God.
I should do like a social media Pride and Prejudice.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to write a play for these two called Prejudice and Pride about two arsehole actors having to be...
Yeah.
So they get to play two parts, the actor and the character behind it.
Yeah. That's double.
That sounds amazing.
But I think I'm busy that day. I might get around it.
I love that. That's,
but anyway, so then I wrote a stand-up routine for her to do in a pub in Somerset. So she shows no fear. She just does it.
Wow.
And her friend called up. I said, well, look, why don't you do Edinburgh? And she said, well, that's amazing. My friend Sophie just called up yesterday and said, let's do Edinburgh. And they had their eyes on two guys, so I just said, well, what are you going to do? And they said, well, I don't know. So I said, well, I just started writing. And it all came out in about 2 weeks.
Organically fell out.
And I hadn't written sketch comedy for years. And it's such fun to do it because you know, I spent last year writing 600 pages of a TV series.
Oh, wow.
Which was really complicated plotting because it's you know, very, very difficult. And it goes the story goes for 10 hours.
There's arcs and things and leaving stuff open. And
lots going on.
It just disappears up its own backside every few pages. It's good fun. You know. And if you want the recipe for the perfect margarita, it's up on our website.
Always.
Yeah. This would be an amazing show. You go and have a margarita.
If only, yeah.
And go watch the show. So if you are in Edinburgh this year and you want to get a little bit merry on the margaritas, go check out Margarita Dreams.
Margaritas on me, everyone.
Oh, and you heard it here first.
No,
We're live. We're live. I'm afraid, Richard. Terribly sorry.
Sorry, I'm nearly dead.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Are you
going to
be up in Edinburgh, you guys? Are you coming up there?
I'm not coming up this year.
Possibly. I'm not in anything, unfortunately. I'm just going to go and get drunk, but I might go and watch. Hope for the best.
If I come up, I'll definitely come and watch this. Definitely.
Good, because it's 50 minutes of light-hearted fun.
50 minutes of fun.
Yeah.
Perfect. What more could you want? right, we're going to go for... What we're going to do. I'm going to go back to Crybaby, the original soundtrack I was talking about at the beginning of the show, because this is the song called Crybaby from the movie Crybaby. And I do love it. This is Back Row and Chill. Crybaby.
Such a good choice.
I like that. It's a very vintage vibe today with all the music. It's just gone 5:30, which means it's time for film review. So a huge welcome.
Which means I'm here.
Which means Lucy Patterson's in the building.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
Lucy.
Lucy.
Oh! Terrible. Same difference.
No, she was just talking to Lisa.
Yeah, that's what it was.
My friend Lisa.
That's what she calls her vagina.
Yeah. She's talking to that. Hello, down there.
Right, so this is film review time, where the time where we sort of talk about what we think is great, what we've been looking at, watching, on either on the internet or TV.
Yeah.
I've got a bit of theatre this week.
Oh, lovely.
What has everybody been watching that they've been loving or hating?
Well, I went to a screening this week, or yesterday actually, of a film called England Is Mine.
Oh, I saw a poster for that today.
Yes.
And was like,
It is the Morrissey biopic.
Oh, yes.
And yeah.
Really want to see that.
Do you know what? It was a really, really good film, but you have to know your musical history to be able to appreciate
it. Oh, really?
the writer and director, he has really limited his audience by doing that, I think. But then I think maybe it's his baby, that's what he wanted to do with it. It's basically from Morris's late teens to the moment that the Smiths are born, you know. But it's not obvious that these people are who they are. Like, Johnny Marr is in it. Now, unless you know of the Smiths and you know of Johnny Marr, you're not going to know who they're talking about.
No.
At any point do they play any Smith songs or any Morrissey music or mention anybody's surname, you know, to make sure that you get the
recognition. Oh, they don't feed it easily to you.
You really need to be a fan. And it's
that's a shame,
actually. It is a shame because it's a really well-made, lovely vintage film with that indie feel that's just amazing, and I absolutely loved it. You know, I got those sparks of recognition because I know.
Yeah, they should be
music,
like,
you know,
using it to feed the next generation.
They should, yeah. Really, and they haven't, and it's such a shame. I mean, unfortunately, I wouldn't say run out to the cinema and go and see it. Mm. But if you are a music fan and you've been brought up well on the right music, you know, mm-hmm. and you appreciate the British heritage of music and where it came from, then go and see it, and you will. You'll get. It will make you feel like you're in on something
right.
that nobody else is, mm. you know. And there was a lot of people there last night that had the same spark of recognition as me. I could hear them sort of tittering in the background, you know, when something was mentioned. And, I mean, the end of it, to me, made my heart swell. But nobody, people who don't know about the Smiths and about Johnny Marr and how it happened
yeah.
will go, eh?
Who's in
Why
it?
Why the fuck is it just ended now, you know?
Who's in it?
Jack Loudon.
Okay.
He was in Dunkirk. He was the fighter pilot who ditched.
I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen Dunkirk yet. So
yeah.
Okay.
He's very, very good. Not very well known, anybody
but
in the cast,
will be
to be
now.
Honest. But will be now, yeah, because of Dunkirk. And hopefully because of this as well, because he did such a good job.
Who's the girl in it?
Do you know? I don't actually know her name.
Because I remember seeing the
There's
poster.
There's two. There's Angie, who is just a fictional person. And there is Linda. I can't remember her surname, but they're actually still friends now.
I saw a poster for it, and I recognised the girl's name.
Yeah.
And I went,
it's actually in front of my face.
I'm going to Google the poster for it. So it's called Made in England?
England is Mine.
Oh, no, that's a different lyric.
That's a lyric from a Smith song, I think.
England is Mine.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to Google that poster right now.
And the poster's amazing. And the shot
Jessica Finley Brown.
Oh, yes.
Jessica Brown Finley. Why can't anyone get anyone's name right today?
We're all dyslexic.
Jessica Brown Finley, yeah. Actually, yeah.
As Linda Sterling. And she is a real-life person.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's if you want to be in on it, like everybody else, and you know the Smiths and you're a fan, then go and see it. You really will enjoy it. But otherwise, I wouldn't really bother.
Sport independence.
It's a shame. It's a shame for the writer and director who took so much time and obviously loved it so much. Mm. It's wholly his baby. And I just think, oh, mate, you've really cut a lot of people
share
out
it.
Here.
Come share on. Share it.
Yeah. Sharing is caring.
So, yeah, find it if you can when it comes out. But, you know.
I didn't actually have a lot of time to go and see anything completely coming out of the cinema. I had plans, didn't happen, but I did go and see, because it's my birthday, I got to pick. My mum was like, what show do you want to go and see? So I got to go see West End, and I said, I really want to see a comedy about a bank robbery.
Ooh.
Because I've gone to see the play that went wrong four times.
Oh, wow.
Have you? That many times?
Yeah.
Cool.
Not all the time I've been paying. but I've gone to see it with friends and family four times, I think three or four times, and it's absolutely hysterical.
Yeah.
And it's the same company, Mischief Theatre Company, have made a comedy about bank robbery.
Nice.
And it's a similar style, similar jokes, but this one is way more wacky, and it's I would probably say it's like, it's set in the 50s, and it is, that's what it is. It is a play about a bank robbery.
Because that's always hilarious.
Yeah. And and it's just brilliant, the scenes that they set up, and it's very slapstick, and it's very punny. So I would say almost similar to like Airplane, movie.
Nice.
But as a show.
Yeah.
Really high energy. Because it's set in the 50s, they do really amazing set changes, and the set changes are they're all singing live doo-wop songs, which is very very heavily inspired me today. So they sing, and all of the performers in the show have the most amazing voices, and they all get to sort of showcase it on different scene changes.
Yeah.
It's like a a standard farce, brilliant.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. And the main actors who are in it, well, actually everybody, even the small people, they keep coming back as character changes and costume change. They have constant costume changes.
Wow.
Some of the puns are just brilliant. For an example, I got home and I was just raving about it to my boyfriend. He didn't really understand. I was like, it's so funny that this happened. You had to be there. But there is a scene where there's a girl and she has all these boyfriends. She's called Charisse and she's got all these boyfriends basically just to pay her way through life. She's excellent. Like a gold digger. So she's got one of the old people home, another one, you know, like one that's German and stuff. And so she finds this new guy and she brings him back for like a sort of a one night stand in the 50s. It's this really hilarious moment where she brings him back. And then knocks on the door. Her boyfriend, who's just got out of prison, arrives. And so he's like, quick, go hide over there in the cupboard above the bed. And so then the boyfriend from prison comes out and he's trying to like get it on with her. And she's trying to say, no. And he's like, why? You made me wait 2 years. We're doing it now. And she's like, okay. And then the guy's trying to like, she's trying to like make out with the prison boyfriend. And the other boyfriend is trying to get out of across the bed to get to the door to go out.
Oh my God.
And there's this amazing, he accidentally touches the prison guy's bum.
Oh my.
And the guy stops and he goes, oh, it's been two years since I've had your touch. Touch me more. And he's like, massage me. And the guy, and there's just this hilarious moment. This guy is having to like, and then he's like, spank me. And this guy is having to like spank the boyfriend. It's brilliant. And everyone in the audience was just like pissing themselves laughing. There's so many silly puns. It's just like a really fun silly night out. So the a comedy about bank robbery. It is in, I think it's the Criterion Theatre, mm-hmm. Piccadilly Circus.
Oh, yeah.
It is brilliant. And it's really good. It's a good laugh.
Lovely.
And I also went, so now I've seen all three, because they also did a Christmas version of Peter Pan, What Goes Wrong.
Brilliant.
So they tried to do a production of Peter Pan and that went to shit. I'm pretty sure that they actually recorded and put that on the BBC, so maybe in the BBC archives you can have a look at that without having
the iPlayer or something.
Yeah, without having to go to the theatre.
Yeah.
I saw, actually, it was a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. I saw the Whitney film. The Whitney documentary.
But you know, yeah. I haven't seen it. What was it like?
Well, I'm a very big fan of Whitney. Yeah. Like, real big fan.
That's always
fan.
The test, isn't it? If you are really a fan.
And to be honest, it was good.
Yeah.
But I wanted to cry.
Really?
And I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Oh, one of them. So you didn't really feel it like you're supposed to.
I felt
to.
It, but I didn't feel it enough, you know?
Yeah.
And it was very sad, but I just wanted a bit more. Yeah. A bit more like...
devastation right in the gut, devastate you. Yeah, I know.
I mean, incredibly talented, and obviously very sad what happened to her.
Yeah,
but there was some chunk, some meat missing from it.
Missing, yeah.
If you, because I saw that film and I interviewed the director.
Did you?
Yeah,
for
the show. Yeah. And it was amazing because the way that film came about was found footage of that guy who was basically vlogging. Before vlogging was even a thing, they vlogged the Whitney tour. So that's how they got the footage.
Oh my goodness.
It was some guy with a cat hand.
Before it was a thing.
Yeah, exactly. So he got exclusive access to Whitney. So if you are a Whitney fan, you're going to go and see footage you'll never see.
Things you never see, absolutely.
And they intermix the vlogging footage with her interview footage. And just how... crazy, even though she was having like crazy personal problems, even in her interview she came across as really grounded and really kind of level and
held.
She was,
held, wasn't she?
Talking about how like fame doesn't make money and fame doesn't bring you happiness and not necessarily, you know, what is it, it can bring you like power and prestige or whatever, but it can't bring you happiness. No. You cannot pay for happiness.
Absolutely not.
Which was, there was some very poignant moments from that film. Yeah. I did like that.
Go and see it if you're a fan of Whitney.
Yeah.
Go and see it.
There was a film that I saw a few weeks ago that is about to come out this week called The Big Sick.
Oh,
which
that
I know
looks really
yeah,
good.
Oh, yeah, I saw it too.
She's seen
That's
it as
so
well.
Good.
It's supposed to be really good.
It's really good.
It is really good. And I
don't like the poster, though.
Yeah,
the poster makes it look like a really, really bad rom-com.
A cheesy
rom-com. Well, to be fair, the title also doesn't know favours.
Yeah, the title and whoever did the title and like the PR...
Get fired.
Yeah, stop it.
Not bad.
Yeah, not working. But the actual movie's brilliant and it brings up... I think really, really good sort of interracial, intercultural
does.
Dating.
It deals with it so well. It's just amazing. It's such a good film.
And I had the massive honour of going to interview the main girl from it, Zoe.
So jealous of you.
She's so funny.
Yeah,
she's so good.
She's brilliant. Oh, if you love her, you will love this movie.
Yeah, it's just so charming. It's lovely.
So I popped down and had a little chat with her, and that was amazing. I'm going to play that now.
Lovely.
So this is all about The Big Sick. The movie's coming out. I'm going to find out the release date, but I'm pretty sure it's like next week.
Something like that.
Here we go. The movie was amazing, so I'm so excited to meet you.
Thank you.
Just for our listeners who are like the big sick, because the title I thought was quite, that was the only thing that I thought was a bit odd about the movie, because I didn't feel like it sold what it was. What is the movie about?
I don't think you're alone with the title. You know, I think sometimes temporary titles stick and no one can come up with anything better.
Yeah.
I think that's how you end up sometimes also with posters that don't necessarily speak to everything in the film. This movie's based on the true story of this comedian, Kumail Nanjiani, and his wife, Emily Gordon. They wrote it, and Kumail's playing himself in it. And it's about the beginning of their relationship when they were sort of falling in love, and his family is Muslim and still expected him to marry a Muslim girl. Yeah. And right as they were sort of trying to work that out between themselves, she got very, very sick. And that is sort of the launching pad for the film.
The unusual thing about this film, obviously, it's sort of an independent story. It should be all wrapped up in the one thing. However, I left the cinema going, I really want to find out what happens when Emily goes home. Like, I really wanted the story to continue, because I think that the film brings up some massive issues that we are starting to really address about cross-culture, racism. Obviously, Emily's entering into an Arab family, which... One thing for me, when I went into the cinema, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my life. My boyfriend's from a Muslim family. Mm. I'm kind of going through the same thing.
Wow.
Exactly. And then there's the scene when you were saying that, well, Emily was married before, so was I. And he spat my drink out. I was like, oh my God, this is my life. I've accidentally walked into a movie about my life.
Wow.
So I think, but it's so cool to see that on the screen and get people talking, because they bring up some like really major issues, like immigration as well, like moving to a different country, and then how much should you absorb that new country's culture and leave your own? And it's like, oh, it was, you can talk about the film for ages afterwards. So I kind of want to see a sequel. Would you ever do a sequel?
I mean, if they thought of something that was a good story, yeah, sure. I loved working with these guys. I'm glad you responded to it like that. I think there are things in it which make it it's particularly sweet to bring a movie about the immigrant experience out into the world right now, and to bring one about the Muslim American experience into the world right now, and have it be like a very sympathetic and empathic portrayal. The other thing I'd say is like I think a lot of people look at the movie as being political because of what the timing in bringing it out, but the story really happened 10 years ago and was written before some of the elections of the last year.
Yeah.
You know, I would say I think the movie's like seeking above all else to entertain, and it's coming with its arms wide open. And even if your listeners feel politically to the right, I think that they might get a lot out of the film.
Oh, for sure. I was so like emotionally overwhelmed by it. It was great. I was like, I need to have a cup of tea. So what's next for you? Can you talk about any of your next projects? Or
I wrote a play, and that's going to go up in New York off Broadway in the fall. So soon I'm going to have to switch hats.
How do you feel about live versus film?
This is my fourth play I've written, and I really do think from an acting standpoint that it's where I've learned the most, because you have to be responsible for your own performance. On a movie set, there's always going to be like ADR to fix any lines that you want to change, or the editors and director are really creating your performance. You're just giving them options. So it's not really yours. And being on stage, you really have to learn how to take care of yourself and tell a story. And I definitely feel like I'm a better actor for having done as many plays as I have.
Yeah.
But I you know, I grew up loving the cinema, and that's what made me want to be an actor in the first place. So it's always going to have a special place in my heart.
For sure.
The worst stage fright I had was I was doing, you guys had a production here of The Seagull that moved to Broadway. And when it moved to Broadway, I took over for one of the actresses who'd been here. And I was playing Masha, and she sort of starts the second half of the play. There's a big scene for her. And our lighting board that controls the lights that light the stage crashed in our intermission, and they couldn't get it working again. And so they said, you're going to have to go on with house lights, which are the lights in the audience. And so I went out on stage, and I had been so confident in that scene and getting like exit applause every night. And I looked out and saw like you know, 1,000 people and completely blanched. Like, I've never been more afraid in my life. I felt like my voice suddenly couldn't carry and my palms were sweaty and my timing was all off. And the light board came back on as soon as I exited the stage. So I was the only one really subjected to it.
You're like, damn it.
Yeah. And I really felt like, oh, the darkness is my friend. Like, it's the thing that allows me to do this because I'm not a good public speaker and I'm not shy, but I'm not particularly excited about, you know, presenting my body for everyone's inspection every time I step on stage.
Yeah. Well, I bet, weirdly, probably, that was probably one of your best performances because you would have been, like, not aware of it.
I definitely think it was not one of my best performances. I think I was too afraid to do my job properly. Thank God.
But they make
the
best stories as well.
Yeah.
The stuff that goes wrong. Exactly. You could be having a drink later and be like, well, guess what, guys? The light bulb went down.
It's definitely the one I remember.
Well, thank you so, so much, Zoe. Everyone go and see the film The Big Sick because it's bloody brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
She was the sweetest.
She sounds so lovely.
Adorable.
Mm. Little button.
Yeah.
Little squeezer. And you just dropped the bomb. She's going out with Paul Dano.
Yeah.
Who is like... He's one of those people where it's like, he's not attractive, but he's attractive.
Yeah, he's got something.
He has, isn't he? And I can't really work out
Yeah, it's
what.
Like, I'm not attracted to you,
yeah,
but I'm also a little bit attracted to you.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's very weird.
I think maybe it's the talent thing.
Yeah, probably just because he's
really
good.
Definitely the talent.
Yeah.
He's very mysterious.
He is, isn't he?
He's very good.
Bit of an oddball.
He's very good in Okja on Netflix.
I still haven't managed to get through that.
Oh my god!
I'm scared that I'm not going to want to eat chicken anymore.
Well, yeah, I watched it and I became a veggie.
Exactly.
Well, I'm a vegan, so...
Yeah.
Vegan rules.
Oh, you need a t-shirt, babe.
Yes, I do.
She didn't tell me she was vegan. I bought a chocolate for her birthday.
Yeah. Whoopsie.
Whoopsie. Right, a little bit about what's coming out because I was researching today.
Yeah.
Because next week on the August is when Netflix drops loads of new movies.
Yep.
So some of the ones that were coming out, what I recognised was A Cinderella Story, Cloud Atlas, Practical Magic, Sleepy Hollow. All three Matrix movies are going to be on
Netflix.
Are going to be on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm a bit excited because you know when you feel like you've literally done Netflix,
you've watched it all and you're like, no, what else is here?
I don't know though, sometimes I feel like there's too much choice. Well, so I end up watching nothing.
Yeah.
Or I start something in 5 minutes and it's not that good. Yeah. Try this, it's not that good.
Yeah. See, this is the problem we talked about earlier with dating, when there's too much,
there's
choice,
too much choice,
or you feel like you can always swap over. Yeah, because I have that. I'm
looking
like,
for the thing, the one
movie that's going to just instantly gratify you. And sometimes you've got to get into a movie.
Well, yeah.
You've got to give it a chance.
You've got to sit there and let it smoulder a little bit. Cook something
warm
up.
You up.
Earlier in the show, we also talked about foot fetishes.
Weird.
Because a lot of people messaged me, asked to see my feet on my social media.
So gross.
And so we did a Twitter poll saying people have been asking Johanna James to send pictures of her feet. How weird do you think that is? At the moment, we've got 0% for ooh gross, which is weird.
What?
Who are these people?
20% say, can I get a photo?
Oh my.
40% say, put some socks on. And 40% think, cheesy. I mean, yeah.
0% think it's
0% think it's gross. Come on, guys.
Oh, really?
Please let me have a bit
more. What is wrong with you?
Bit of faith in humanity. I have some movie trivia that I've been trying to let people know about for a few weeks now, and we've always run out of time. So
I love this stuff.
So, right, I thought you would like it, Lucy, so I thought I'd save it for you. But, right, so here's my movie trivia of the week. The guitar used in Mad Max, the recent one, weighed 132 pounds and was gas powered.
Wow.
And it was an actual spurted fire.
Yeah.
That wasn't CGI.
Wow.
And it was activated by the guitar's whammy bar and gas powered, and it shot out all
amazing.
The flames. Right. So a 16-year-old Robert Downey Jr. got suspended from high school for ripping up a classmate's Iron Man comic and calling him a nerd. That is irony.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that irony?
That is real irony. But I mean, it worked
amazing.
Out really well for him.
It really did.
Really shit for the other guy.
Yeah. The other guy's like, hey.
What do I get out of this?
You could have signed my Iron Man comic, man. That guy, he should send him like a proper signed original copy.
He should, shouldn't he?
Step up, Robert Downey Jr. So I Am Legend, the movie poster in I Am Legend, there was a movie poster for Batman versus Superman.
Yes, it's like a big
In the background, which was before Batman and Superman was a thing, because the writer of I Am Legend also wrote an early draft of that movie.
So. I only spotted that probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago when I watched it.
Yeah.
I'd never ever even noticed it before, and I've seen that film a lot.
It's a weird little like freaky future.
How mad!
Isn't there a number two
of I Am Legend?
Number two, I'm sure I read that.
Is there
I Am Legend 2?
I don't know.
Wow.
Sorry, I don't want to get your hopes up.
Well, I was going to say, the end of the last one really doesn't give you much.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure I read that.
There's two endings to I Am Legend. If you watch the DVD, you've got the original ending and then you've got the cinema ending.
Yeah.
One's nicer than the other one.
Oh, yeah. just a bit.
In Assassin's Creed, the 125-foot freefall stunt was the highest freefall stunt for 35 years in cinema history. So the guy who...
That was pretty breathtaking, actually.
Chucked himself off 120... I mean, being able to do that, 125-foot freefall.
You got to be a bit of a nutcase, really, sick. But it looked amazing. Yeah.
No wires or anything.
No.
Huh. In the Batman, the original series, in 1966, Robin exclaimed, "Holy!" and then something 365 times.
Wow.
There are only 120 episodes. So you can sort of do the maths and see how many times he goes like, "Holy bananas! Holy moly! Holy!" And like, it just got ridiculous. So he had to pick up 300...
Say something else.
Yeah, 365 random things. What? Wow. In Star Wars, I didn't know this, I'll pick that up, in every single Star Wars movie includes a line that says, "I have a bad feeling about this."
Really?
Oh. Yeah, and
see,
I've seen...
I'm not a Star Wars
person. And I've seen it on... On YouTube, they've like clicked together all of so even in the modern films, Harrison Ford says it in the recent one, but everyone goes, "I have a bad feeling about this." I was like, "Well, listen to your feelings, guys." Yeah. If everyone's feeling is a bad feeling,
watch the other films.
It's the Force. It's probably the Force. That's what you're feeling. In Alien, Sigourney Weaver actually made the backwards basketball shot.
Wow.
That appears in the movie. It was a total fluke.
Really? Oh.
She chucked it back and it landed in and it was done. It was a complete accident.
Wow, that's so good.
Because it is, because people were saying it's phenomenal, because even like professional basketball players from away couldn't have done that. Yeah. So she just chucked it and it was just serendipity. Amazing. And Saving Private Ryan, the opening scene cost $12 million out of the $70 million budget for the film. So massive chunk of that.
Very well done, though.
My heart. Mm-hmm. In Kill Bill, Oren tells the bride that she won't last 5 minutes in a fight. And their fight sequence is exactly 4 minutes, 59 seconds.
Wow.
So it's like,
that's a good
fight. Quentin Tarantino is like sneaky sneakers.
Sneaky
like
McSneakers in. In Lord of the Rings, Frodo falls over 29 times. Over the three movies.
Stay on your feet, for God's sake.
I think he's my spirit animal. In Jason Bourne, the first movie, Matt Damon speaks 45 times.
Really?
Is that it?
That's it. Mainly, and he says things like, "Let's get out of here."
Wow.
And things like that.
excellent.
Which brings me to my final one. "Let's get out of here" is the most common film phrase used in cinema history. And again, I've seen a thing on YouTube where they just cut together all these movies. And it is. It's there. It's like, "Let's get out of here."
Who sits there and does that? Though? I'm grateful, but who sits there and does
that? Total nerds, and I love all of them.
Yes, me too. Amazing.
This is amazing. And also, two more. I've got to get them in because they're just amazing. So in Fight Club, there is a Starbucks cup in every scene of the movie.
I knew that one and I don't know how.
There is a Starbucks cup in the background. Somewhere in the teeny wee thing, there's a little Starbucks cup.
Yeah.
Fight Club, sponsored by Starbucks.
Yep.
And finally, Steven Spielberg has been thanked more times than God at the Oscars. Steven Spielberg has been thanked 42 times and God has been thanked 19 in acceptance
speeches. I would say. So, in my world, anyway.
So, Steven Spielberg...
Steven Spielberg, God.
Yeah.
It's like, thanked more than God. Like double the amount of time. Oh my gosh, that is the end of the show. That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, Carla.
Thank you very much.
It's been super fun.
But, whose birthday is it tomorrow?
Whose birthday is it?
It's Johanna's.
Yeah. It's my birthday.
So happy birthday to you, tomorrow, Johanna.
So I'm going to play happy... Well, I'm going to get Stevie Wonder to sing me happy birthday.
Woo-woo!
Right now. Oh, it's back. We'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, definitely. to fit more perfectly than to have a world party on the day you came to be. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. I just never understood how a man who died for good could not have a day that would.